Good afternoon. It's 4:30 and 38 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Joshua Grandison.
And I'm Arlo Barnett.
We just feel like it's time to give a good shot in the arm and get that building in good shape that it'll give us another 20 years of service.
Rowan County School Superintendent Marvin Moore says coming renovations will improve the district's aging high school building.
Floyd County residents are advised to be on the lookout for three people wanted in a murder that took place earlier this month.
And efforts are underway in Ohio to conceal the identities of companies that supply lethal injection drugs.
In sports, Boston University will be playing the Wildcats in Rupp Arena tonight.
Bud Luke has the stocks.
You can expect temperatures around freezing tonight. The complete forecast is coming up. But first, this news.
WYMT is reporting that police in Floyd County have issued arrest warrants for three people being sought in connection with a murder earlier this month. Kentucky State Police say they're looking for Floyd Sexton, John Maggard, and Jennifer Jenerigan in the shooting death of Bill Collins. The victim's body was found in a parking lot along State Route 321. Police believe Collins wrestled with Sexton and Maggard before Sexton shot him. They suspect Jenerigan of driving the getaway car.
Two federal inmates serving time on drug charges have been charged with trying to break out of a prison in southeastern Kentucky. A federal grand jury has charged 29-year-old Corey Baker and 42-year-old Delman Davis with attempted escape from the United States Penitentiary McCreary in Pine Knot, Kentucky. Grand jurors say the two tried to escape on August 10th, but gave no details about what happened. Baker is serving 14 months in prison after having his probation revoked. He was convicted in London, Kentucky, of conspiracy to manufacture marijuana. Davis is serving 21 years in prison after being convicted in Greenville, Tennessee, of conspiracy to distribute cocaine.
A 34-year-old Portsmouth man has been charged with stealing items from a store in Lucasville that were severely damaged in a fire earlier this week. The Portsmouth Daily Times reports that Michael Luther had a hearing in Portsmouth Municipal Court today following his arrest yesterday. He's accused of removing goods from Crabtree's carpet. The Scioto County Sheriff's Department says it received a call from the owner of the business, and deputies then found a man behind the store loading items into a truck. Luther is charged with breaking and entering and theft.
$4 million in renovations are scheduled for Rowan County Senior High School, and Superintendent Marvin Moore says many of the upgrades will be finished in time for the next school year. Moore says the project will provide a much-needed shot in the arm to the 33-year-old school building.
Well, we've employed Ross Tarrant Architects from out of Lexington, and they're in the design stage now with this project, and we're hoping that as soon as school's out in May that we're going to go ahead and hit the ground running, you might say, and get as much we can done over the summer. But we won't be able to complete everything. We're anticipating that'll be an 8 to 9 month project.
Moore says funding for the project will come primarily from the sale of bonds, which can only be used for new construction or renovation purposes. He says the renovations will focus on expanding the school's technology capabilities, along with upgrades to door hardware, bathrooms, and gymnasium seating.
A new report lists Kentucky as one of three states leading the country in using data to improve student success. The Data Quality Campaign is a nonprofit national advocacy organization dedicated to using data to further education across the nation. It praises the Kentucky Center for Education and Workforce Statistics, which is responsible for the policies that govern how student data can be accessed and used. Kate Akers is the Deputy Executive Director of the center, and she says the availability of data has had a positive impact at each individual school across the Commonwealth.
We also see this increase in relationship with our stakeholders and policymakers to really ensure that everyone at all levels is getting access to timely, high-quality data that they need.
The report highlighted strides made in college and career readiness, teacher effectiveness, empowering parents, access and choice, and privacy of data in Kentucky. Two other states, Delaware and Arkansas, were also celebrated for their use of data.
The Attorney General's office has held a drawing to determine which Kentucky counties will receive post-election audits. Tom Latek has more.
The audits required by state law are conducted in six counties after each election through a random drawing. Attorney General Jack Conway lists those chosen.
Owsley, Gallatin, Simpson, Bourbon, Metcalf, Mercer.
He says investigators will conduct spot checks of voters, examine absentee ballots, interview clerks, and examine post-election reports. Conway adds no issues were referred for prosecution in the six counties chosen after the May primary. I'm Tom Latek.
A proposal to streamline the permitting process for new manufacturing plants has put a pair of Kentucky congressmen on opposite sides of the issue. Republican Ed Whitfield is calling for changes to the Clean Air Act that would compel the EPA to provide guidance on how to comply with any new emissions regulations it may issue in the future.
All of us want to create new jobs. We have companies out there today with a lot of cash who want to build these new plants, but because of bureaucratic difficulties, lack of clarity, and lack of guidance on a timely basis from EPA, it makes it extremely difficult to do.
However, Democrat John Yarmuth rejects the premise of the proposed amendment.
New manufacturing facilities aren't being held back by clean air requirements. Weakening the Clean Air Act won't create jobs, and the specific provisions of this bill will slow down permitting, not speed it up. In truth, this bill is yet another Republican attempt to weaken the Clean Air Act protections and attack EPA's authority to reduce harmful air pollution.
Yarmuth and Whitfield debated the proposal yesterday on the House floor.
Alpha Natural Resources says it's laying off 12 workers today at its Taylor Fork mine in Pike County and will close the facility. The firm says 36 employees will continue working for an undetermined amount of time, clearing out equipment and shutting down the operation. Alpha also says it will furlough more than 80 miners at other sites in Mingo and Wayne County, West Virginia.
New figures released today show Ohio's unemployment rate fell to 5.3% in October. That's 0.3%, or a point, rather, below the September rate. The Ohio Department of Job and Family Services says the state's jobless rate is now down more than 2 points from where it was last year at this time.
Gas prices have taken another dip in Kentucky. The website KentuckyGasPrices.com says the cost for regular unleaded gas in the Commonwealth is down 11 cents from last week. The average price in Kentucky today is $2.78. Around the area, it's $2.84 in Moorhead, $2.76 in Maysville, $2.85 in Ashland, and $2.96 in Grayson. The lowest price in Kentucky today is in Fort Campbell, where it's $2.49.
A new report shows more students are graduating from Kentucky's public colleges and universities but are having a tough time getting financial aid from the state. Here's Suzanne Duvall.
The Council on Post-Secondary Education's report shows state colleges and universities conferred more than 62,000 degrees and certificates in the 2012-13 school year, a 13% increase from 4 years ago, but more than 107,000 students who qualified for financial aid were denied because the state did not have enough money to give it to them. Council President Robert King urges state lawmakers to protect student financial aid money in future budgets. I'm Suzanne Duvall.
A veteran of Kentucky's juvenile justice system has been named head of the state's department. Justice and Public Safety Secretary J. Michael Brown said today, Interim Commissioner Bob Hayter has been named to the job on a permanent basis. Hayter has held down the position temporarily since April. Hayter joined the Department of Juvenile Justice as a regional director in 2006, responsible for the operation of several residential juvenile facilities across the state. He was promoted in 2013 to Deputy Commissioner of Support Operations, overseeing the department's administrative, medical program services, and professional development divisions. Hayter holds an MBA from Touro University in Cypress, California, and a bachelor's degree from WKU in Kentucky. His appointment was effective November 1st.
The Ohio House of Representatives approved a bill that shields the identity of companies that supply drugs for lethal injections in order to carry out the state's death penalty yesterday. The vote was 61-25. Republican State Representative Jim Beakey sponsored the measure.
The whole purpose of this legislation is to meet the requirements of the Attorney General so that we can put in place those measures which will allow the people involved in the execution process of those who are condemned to die by a jury of peers and the courts and the judges so it can be done in the most efficient and humanitarian way.
Beakey says the bill is in response to Ohio's difficulty in obtaining drugs to be used for lethal injections. The measure permits identification of drug suppliers 20 years after they stopped doing business with the state.
Republican lawmakers have proposed a bill that would allow some people who overdose on heroin or witness an overdose to avoid charges if they immediately seek help from public safety officials. Republican State Senator Chris McDaniel, who is sponsoring the bill, said during a press conference in Covington today, it is an attempt to combat the state's growing heroin addiction problem. Heroin overdose deaths now account for 32% of the state's drug overdose fatalities, up from 20% in 2012. Northern Kentucky has seen the largest increase in overdose heroin deaths. The bill would also stiffen penalties for heroin traffickers and spend more money on drug treatment programs. A similar bill failed to pass earlier this year, despite broad support from both political parties.
The man elected as mayor of a central Kentucky city has died before he could take office. We get details from KNN's Will Clark.
Just before 4 Thursday afternoon, Stanford Mayor-elect T.J. Hill was found dead inside of his Lincoln County home by his son. The 56-year-old Hill was a former police officer and was well-liked in the community. Hill had just been elected to the office and was set to take office in January. Investigators do not suspect foul play in Hill's death. I'm Will Clark.
An immigration lawyer in Kentucky is expecting President Obama's executive action on immigration reform to spawn a flurry of activity in his office. John Vickerstaff is based in Louisville.
We're expecting it to cause a big influx of new clients wanting to find out if this, you know, new program will apply to them. You know, Louisville has quite a large immigrant population, and I think it'll have a big impact on people who live in Louisville.
The plan announced Thursday by the president would offer deportation relief and work permits to 5 million immigrants who are now in the U.S. illegally.
U.S. Senator Rand Paul says President Barack Obama's executive actions on immigration, health care reform, and other issues are creating what he calls a major constitutional crisis. Josh James has more.
At a stop in Lexington Friday, Kentucky's junior senator told reporters it's not the details of Obama's immigration policy prescriptions that trouble him, but the way in which he's enacting them. While Paul expressed support for some parts of the plan, including expanding work visas, the potential 2016 GOP presidential contender characterized the executive actions as lawless and grounds for possible legal action.
You can have executive orders that further congressional action, like execute what Congress wanted you to do, but you can't do stuff that's the opposite of what Congress wants you to do. So I think it's going to be pretty clear cut here, and I think there's a very good chance this could go to the Supreme Court.
But the Obama administration is arguing it has the authority to go it alone on the immigration changes, even opting to release the usually private formal Justice Department memo laying out the legal framework for the actions. Meanwhile, Paul says he would back a House resolution declaring that the president is creating new law and violating the Constitution in the process. In Lexington, I'm Josh James reporting.
The first batch of families displaced by the Newtown Pike Extension Project is set to move into their new homes at Davis Park View before Thanksgiving. Josh James attended the ribbon cutting for the first phase of the affordable housing complex and filed this report.
Though construction only began on the small block of permanent housing back in April, the idea of relocating the neighborhood was being floated by transportation officials as far back as 1958. Now, more than half a century later, a handful of Davis Bottom residents who have been living in rent-free government-owned housing for years finally have a place to truly call home. Asked if he's been looking forward to this day, tenant James Rowe doesn't have to think twice.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready to get out of that trailer.
Outside, Johan Graham with Davis Parkview developer AU Associates looks out on the row of duplexes, quadplexes, and single-home houses, all fitted with energy-efficient appliances to help keep utility costs low.
It looks like there's not very many units, but there's 14 packed in here in a pretty tight area, which I think is great because we're walkable to downtown, which is great views from the second story, and we're on the bus line, which is important for low to moderate income people who live in downtown to be close to transportation.
Once the residents move in, the question becomes how to keep the units affordable. To that end, project organizers have set up a community land trust, which is intended to provide some long-term protections for those affected by the extension. In Lexington, I'm Josh James reporting.
Now for your weather forecast for the MSPR listening area, including the counties of Bath, Estill, and Montgomery. Tonight will be partly cloudy, milder, with lows around 32 degrees. Tomorrow, partly cloudy and warmer, with highs up around 58. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, milder, with lows around 42 degrees. And on Sunday, we'll see some showers with a chance of rain 90%, highs up in the lower 60s. On Sunday night, mostly cloudy, a 50% chance of showers and lows around 52. At the start of next week, on Monday, partly cloudy, a 40% chance of showers with highs around 62 degrees. Monday night and Tuesday, partly cloudy, we'll see a 20% chance of rain, lows in the mid-30s with highs around 45. Tuesday night and Wednesday will be partly cloudy with lows in the mid-20s and highs around 40. It's currently 36 degrees in Ashland and in Flemingsburg right now. It's 40 right now in Inez, 39 degrees in Lexington, 40 in Winchester, and 38 degrees here in Moorhead.
It is 4:46, and you're tuned in to Mountain Edition right here on Moorhead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. I'm Joshua Grandison here with Arlo Barnett, and it's good to have your company on this Friday afternoon. On our feature segment, we have commentary from Moorhead State University professor Dr. John Modaff. He ponders the long-term implications of President Barack Obama's executive action on immigration reform.
In the melee of everyday life, we have to decide what something means and move on. We've got things to do. So we ask, what does this mean, when we hear a message or read a message? What we miss, however, in the mad rush, is this question. What could this mean? One might call this the long view of meaning. Instead of rushing to judgment on a single meaning for an action or utterance, we might ponder it as the readers of poetry do, and consider, say, when the president speaks, or his critics rail, what could this mean? Suddenly all of the synesthetic levels can be contemplated. Take the allegedly imperial actions of President Obama concerning the status of persons who are here without permission. His most bilious critics do not object to his goal. They really are more worried about the precedent he is setting. They say he is behaving like other imperial presidents before him of both parties. They are worried about separation of powers in the long term, for we may not have such a benign abuser of executive power in the next president or the next. Any rising arc of executive autonomy takes bad and makes it worse. These critics are taking the long view, and they are asking the less-traveled question, what could this mean? Those who are not in any way troubled by the president's abundant assay of the landscape of his own power are not looking at what the action could mean, but rather, today, what it will mean. And for them, an abstract long-term injustice for the sake of accomplishing a humane welcome for millions of struggling people, well, that's just the way it has to go sometimes. Our hearts are in the right place when we turn the might of this nation to a welcoming, rather than, say, something nasty like war or espionage. Those who support the executive actions on immigration can feel good about doing good, the good of helping others who are struggling, of knowing a fraction of a percent of what they pay in taxes might help a family be reunited in the greatest nation on earth, ready to contribute. They know such stories do happen, and they take them as representative and sufficient. So everyone is right, just not in the same universe. The short-term good is happening at the cost of long-term damage to what is left of the separation of powers. Doing good this way today, is this worth what it could mean tomorrow? I'm John Modaff.
Dr. John Modaff is a professor of speech at Moorhead State University. The time is 4:49, and Tanner Boyd has been keeping his eyes on your sports world. He's up in 30 seconds.
Support for MSPR comes from Eat Gallery in historic downtown Maysville. Eat Gallery features original items and unique gifts, including local artwork, fine jewelry, sculptures, and natural art from around the world. Eat Gallery offers a variety of handmade heirlooms, including earrings, bracelets, and necklaces. Open Tuesdays through Fridays, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. The phone number for Eat Gallery is 606-564-5578 and online at eatgallery.com.
The cats hope to relax at home. Good evening. Reporting for Moorhead State Public Radio Sports, I'm Tanner Boyd. The University of Kentucky men's basketball team will hit the floor again tonight at 7 in Rupp Arena
Boston is the opponent this time, and Coach Cal's platoon should enjoy the breather after a top-five matchup against Kansas earlier this week. UK assistant coach John Robick discusses why the Wildcats will be so difficult to score on tonight and the remainder of the season.
We're so big that if we can keep them off the foul line and keep them off the three-point line, it's going to be tough to score. Teams are going to come in with the theory that we have to beat them from the three-point line.
The first-ranked Wildcats are currently 3-0 on the year. The Morehead State men's basketball team is continuing its stretch of five non-conference games in 7 days tonight. The Eagles will be facing Louisiana Tech in the Coaches versus Cancer Classic in Louisiana. Head coach Sean Wood says he's been waiting for some big things out of his players, especially on the younger end of the bench.
Our team is still trying, as you see, you know, we're still work in progress, but you can see it's coming. You know, these new guys are getting acclimated. You know, Anthony Alici, Marcus Fudgens, you know, Markel Willis, and the young fella and Miguel Descent, you know, they're coming. They're not all the way there yet, so we're going to need them, and they're getting better and better every day.
Tip-off from the Thomas Assembly Center is set for 8 p.m. The Morehead State women's basketball team will face another tough road game as they face Indiana tonight. MSU is coming off a loss to number 13 University of Kentucky Wednesday, leaving them only one day to prepare. Eagles coach Greg Todd says Indiana's team is young, but shouldn't be underestimated.
But they have some very good freshmen, and they shoot the ball extremely well. So we'll have a tough matchup there. But I don't feel like they have near the talent level that University of Kentucky has. So it'll be a different, little different type of game. But we hopefully will go up there and learn a lot of things as well, and hopefully be a little more competitive.
Game time at Historic Assembly Hall is slated for 7 p.m. Notre Dame will try to solve its turnover problem Saturday against Louisville, which leads the nation with 22 interceptions. The Cardinals are led by safety Gerard Holloman, whose 13 interceptions are one shy of the NCAA record. That's a major concern for the Fighting Irish. They've turned the ball over 9 times in back-to-back losses to Arizona State and Northwestern. Everett Golson has been especially troublesome with 19 turnovers in 7 games, 12 on interceptions. Coach Brian Kelly says the Irish have been sloppy, with 3 of their 4 fumbles the past 2 games not being caused by hits. Kelly also says Golson needs to know where Holloman is on every passing play. Louisville coach Bobby Petrino says the Irish offense keeps scoring despite the turnovers. The Morehead State football Eagles close the books on their 2014 season tomorrow as they travel to Charlotte for a noon game. MSU heads into its final against the soon-to-be FBS 49ers with a 4-7 record. However, senior slotback Brandon Bornhauser says the Eagles won't concede anything to their bigger and more athletic opponent.
Yeah, you know, that's one thing that you know, they may have scholarship and, you know, they're a good team and everything, but, you know, I'll take the group of guys that I have on my team any day of the week against anybody, and, you know, and it'll be fun, it'll be exciting, and, you know, we're ready for the challenge.
Charlotte will play in Conference USA next fall. The 49ers routed MSU 61-17 last November at Jane Stadium. Marshall is fighting to earn its way into a New Year's Day bowl. UAB is more concerned with becoming more eligible for any bowl and learning the program's uncertain fate. The 18th-ranked Thundering Herd enter Saturday's game at Legion Field, looking to make another good impression on the College Football Playoff Committee. Marshall coach Doc Holliday says he's not worrying about those rankings. The Thundering Herd are 20-point favorites over the Blazers, who need to win one of their final 2 games to become bowl eligible. They've been battling a potentially major distraction, with the university exploring dropping the program. UAB's only bowl trip came in 2004. No matter what Florida does Saturday, it won't really change the season. The Gators can end a 3-game losing streak at Florida Field, become bowl eligible, and give 22 seniors and fired coach Will Muschamp an enjoyable home finality. But none of those would redefine Florida's year, which will be remembered for continued defensive failures, late game meltdowns, and the dismissal of the head coach. The Gators should be able to get it done against the lower division Eastern Kentucky, a team from the football championship subdivision. The Colonels are 0-4 all time against the Southeastern Conference and 7-20 against the teams from the football bowl subdivision. And finally, it's quarterfinal round action tonight in Kentucky's high school football playoffs, an area Class 3A battle. Lawrence County visits Belfry, which beat Coach Joey Cecil's Bulldogs 34-19 during the regular season.
That's something that, you know, I hope is not a mental block in the back of their minds. The worst thing about all this will be the eighth time we played them in 4 years, and every year in the playoff, this is where our road's in. So hopefully we can find something a little bit within us down deep to fight back.
In a big Class A game, Raceland entertains Paintsville. Both teams have explosive offensive, but Raceland coach Mike Sammons says that he expects the game to be a shootout.
I think when you get deeper in the playoffs, it seems like scoring becomes a premium. A lot of times teams are better prepared. You know, we're pretty much going to know what they're going to do. They're going to know what we're going to do. I think it comes down to who executes a game plan, who's able to value the football.
And that's a check of sports. Reporting for Moorhead State Public Radio, I'm Tanner Boyd.
For MSPR comes from MSU Athletics, online at msueagles.com. Women's basketball will open its home schedule by hosting Brescia at 6 p.m. on Monday, November 24th in the Academic Athletic Center. Tickets and more information from the MSU Eagle Ticket Office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing stock market report for MSU Public Radio. U.S. stocks traded higher after China's central bank made its first interest rate cut in more than 2 years, and the European Central Bank took action to stimulate the economy in Europe. And the Dow Industrials and the S&P both finishing at records today. The Dow Industrials were up 88.81 at 17,807.81, and the S&P 500 was up 10.68 at 2,063.43. The NASDAQ Composite was up 11.1 at 4712.97, which would be the highest close since March 2000 for the NASDAQ. New York Stock Exchange breadth was 2-1 in favor of winning stocks over losers. Caterpillar led your Dow, of the 30 Dow industrial stocks. Caterpillar was the best today with a rise of more than 4% after Stifel Nicolaus initiated coverage on the stock with a buy. And as mentioned, you had very good news from overseas. Major European national stock indices closed sharply higher after European Central Bank President Mario Draghi reiterated dovish statements in a speech at a European banking conference in Frankfurt. Later in the day, the ECB also announced that it has begun buying asset-backed securities, and also in a surprise move after the close of the Shanghai Exchange, the People's Bank of China cut its benchmark interest rates on, and this for the first time in more than 2 years due to lower borrowing, or I should say this is the first cut for China's benchmark interest rates in more than 2 years in order to lift a cooling economy back on track. The one-year benchmark lending rate has been trimmed by 40 basis points to 5.6%. The euro fell more than 1% against the U.S. dollar today to finish at 124. In the United States, preliminary PMI data from market showed a reading of 54.7 for the Purchasing Managers Index. From October's final reading of 55.9, analysts had expected an increase. Crude oil futures for January delivery settled up 66 cents at $76.51 a barrel, while gold futures for December delivery were up $6.80 to finish at $1,197.70 an ounce. The U.S. 10-year Treasury note edged lower to finish at 2.32%, and as mentioned, the U.S. dollar was very strong today as it gained against most major world currencies. Turning now to individual stocks, it was Ashland Incorporated down 9 cents at 112.84, Windstream up 11 cents at 9.96, Bank of America up 10 cents at 17.10, Arch Coal was up 18 cents at 2.71, AK Steel up 20 cents at 6.39, and Marathon Petroleum was up $1.70 at 96.86. Reporting for MSU Public Radio, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
Now for a check of your weather forecast for the MSPR listening area. That includes the cities of Ashland, Farmers, and Carlisle. Tonight will be partly cloudy and milder with lows around 32. Tomorrow, partly cloudy and much warmer. We'll see highs in the upper 50s. It's currently 37 in Ashland, 39 in Lexington, 40 in Winchester, and 39 degrees here in Moorhead.
That's it for Mountain Edition this afternoon. We had help today from MSPR staff members Chuck Mraz, Tanner Boyd, Jordan Simonson, and as always, Dan Conte. From WUKY, Josh James, and from the Kentucky News Network, we had help from Will Clark, Tom Latek, Suzanne Duvall. And John Modaff of Moorhead State University gave us our feature segment this afternoon. This is Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY in Morehead, and translator W202BH in Inez. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Arlo Barnett and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Joshua Grandison for Morehead State Public Radio News. All Things Considered is up next. The time is 5 o'clock.